And good morning, everyone, and welcome to the August HITECH meeting. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and we are glad that you can join us today. This meeting is open to the public, and your feedback is always welcomed, which could be typed in the Zoom chat feature throughout the meeting, or could be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled around noon or so Eastern time. Before we get started with our meeting, I'd like to welcome ONC's executive leadership team. And with us today is Steve Posnack, the Deputy National Coordinator, Elise Sweeney Anthony, the Executive Director of the Office of Policy, and Avana Shambhag, the Executive Director of the Office of Technology. I'd like to begin roll call of our HITECH members. So when I call your name, please indicate if you are here. And I'll start with our co-chairs, Aaron Meary.
Good morning.
Madel Briggs Melanson.
Good morning, everyone.
Isla Blend. Hans Botendijk.
Good morning.
Sarah DeSilvi. Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Cynthia Fisher. Lisa Fry.
Good morning.
Anna Galvin.
Good morning.
Raj Gavarti.
Good morning.
Valerie Gray. Stephen Hester.
Good morning.
Jim Gerges.
Good morning.
Bryant Thomas Karras. Ken Kamoto.
Morning.
Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Hung Lu.
Good morning.
Arian Malik.
Good morning.
Anna McAllister.
Good morning.
Glenn McDonald.
Good morning.
Devin McGraw.
Here, good morning.
Aaron Einstein.
Good morning.
Elio Oliveira.
I'm present. Good morning.
PK Lama Ocean Kenton. Narish Sundarrajan.
Good morning.
Alexis Snyder.
Good morning.
Bill Sutherland.
Good morning.
And Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
Good morning. And now for our federal representatives of the HITECH, Adi Gunwapalli. Meg Marshall.
Hi, good morning.
Alexandra Muggy.
Good morning.
And Ram Charam.
Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you. And I'd like to turn it over to Aaron.
Can you hear me?
I'd like to turn it over to Aaron. All right.
Yeah,
thank
I might.
You. I'd like to turn it over to Aaron Neinstein, who would like to make a brief announcement.
Yeah, I just want ahead, to update everyone that I've made a move from my position at University of California, San Francisco to Notable. Where I'm now chief medical officer as of last month. Thank you, Mike.
Great. Thanks, Aaron. And now Hung Lu would also like to make a brief announcement.
I wanted to announce that I have joined the Clinical Advisory Committee for Health Gorilla. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Aaron and Hung. Appreciate it. And now please join me in welcoming Steve Posnack for his opening remarks. Steve?
All right. Thanks, Mike. So still good morning to everybody based on either coast. So thank you for joining. It'll be a relatively short HITECH meeting as HITECH meeting goes, HITECH meetings go. There we go. First, I want to thank Hans and Shelley, our colleagues leading the Pharmacy Interoperability and Emerging Therapeutics Task Force for their efforts over the summer. They've fortunately run one of the summer camps for HITECH this year. And all the rest of the members of that task force as well. We're looking forward to hearing what they've been up to today and how they've been making progress. Before we get into the agenda for today, I did want to give a few brief ONC updates. The first is that the annual comment period for the Interoperability Standards Advisory is open until October 6th. This is an opportunity to provide comments as usual, suggest revisions, and propose additions to the ISA before we publish, if you can believe it, the 10th annual reference edition in January 2024. You can go to healthit.gov ISA for more information on that webpage. Also, to note that we recently published the approved standards for 2023 as part of the standards version advancement process, SVAP, as we like to call it. Starting September 11th in the next few weeks, health IT developers participating in the ONC Health IT certification program will be able to voluntarily incorporate these new versions as per the SVAP processes. Later today, you will hear about the United States Core Data for Interoperability, USCDI V4. That was released in early July. And also along with its release, we are taking submissions for new data elements and other types of revisions for USCDI V5. And that comment period is open through September 20th. Lastly, in terms of the four-year awareness aspect of things, for those of you that have been keeping an eye on the advancement of information blocking related policy and regulatory efforts, just to note that our HHS Office of Inspector General published its final rule related to the civil monetary penalties that would be applicable to the developers of certified health IT and then the health information networks and health information exchanges. So you can find more information about that rulemaking, certainly on the OIG website, as well as federalregister.gov too. ONC events. So we have a few events coming up. I know the tail end of a year is always jam-packed full of events. The centerpiece from an ONC perspective is the ONC Annual Meeting 2023, which will be held in Washington, D.C. on December 14th and 15th. If I've got my math correct, this is our first, in-person annual meeting in at least 3 years. So we look forward to having everybody join us for some really information-rich sessions that we have planned as well. And those will cover everything, you know, from public health, policymaking, technology, a variety of different keynotes, main stage and breakout and education sessions as well. You can go to our events page on healthit.gov. As well as the oncannualmeeting.com website for registration too. So definitely keep that in mind for your winter travel. And then the ONC Tech Forum, our branded kind of tech-focused events, will have two events coming up. One is tomorrow, which is Lighting the Way for Fire API Implementation. That will be a discussion about proposals in the recent HTI1 proposed rule that may impact the endpoint publication for fire endpoints and see what is next for the Lantern project, which I think many of you have been briefed on in past meetings. The second upcoming event under the Tech Forum banner is a two-day workshop entitled Modernizing Public Health Data Exchange, Lessons Learned and Tools for the Road Ahead. That will be September 21st and 22nd. The workshop will highlight the current state of public health data exchange across the U.S. and ONC and CDC's joint efforts to improve public health data infrastructure. So definitely keep an eye on the September dates. We have one more event, which is coming up in October, that's on our dance card. The registration is now open for Enabling Patient Access to Health Data for Actionable Results. And that will be a joint ONC-CMS workshop all-day event on October 18th for virtual. We're going to be bringing together patients, providers, payers, health IT developers to discuss how HHS policies are working in practice and how to maximize the impact of these policies. So again, for all of the event information that we've got going on, you can go to healthit.gov/events check out that type of event information. Sorry, wrong URL. Thank you, Seth. I'm sure we have a vanity URL and the team's working on that now to correct my misstatement. But you can go there to register and get more information about upcoming events throughout the year. So with that, thank you all for joining in today's succinct high-tech meeting. And I will turn it over to Aaron and Medell to go through their opening remarks and the usual opening related business. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate the remarks there. And hello, everybody. Hi, Tech. Happy August. I can't believe it's August 17th. That surprises me even as I say that. This year is flying by. it literally feels like we were just together in the in-person HITECH meeting, but that's been a hot minute now. So this year is flying on by. Lots of good work that has happened this year, truly a banner year for HITECH, thanks to your all hard work and really focus there. The subcommittees that are meeting, we had our annual report work group yesterday, which we'll do a little update about today. Really good discussion there. I'm guilty of going over by 2 minutes because we were knee deep in conversation about some good interoperability business. So that's the kind of work that's coming out from the subcommittees, and we cannot be more proud of you. So welcome to today's edition, and we're going to have a really fun agenda. Madel?
Thank you so much, Aaron. I just want to echo all the sentiments that you mentioned. Hope everyone has been enjoying their summer so far. We absolutely did miss meeting last month, but we know that everyone needed a break and continue to be productive in all of the work groups. And so today will be a bit of a concise day, but also with very impactful information. So Aaron, why don't we go ahead and jump on in and review the agenda?
Let's do it. All right. So today, obviously, we've got the Pharmacy Interoperability Emerging Therapeutics Task Force, say that five times fast. Then we're going to go over the overview of the US CDI core data for interoperability version 4, as Steve was talking about. We'll go to public around lunchtime, 12:05, and then adjourn right about 12:15. So to the point, succinct, as we gear up for even more work ahead in the near future. Madel?
Thank you, Aaron. And so to our first order of business for the morning is the approval of our meeting notes from our June 15th meeting. And so do I have a motion to approve the June 15th meeting notes?
Sylvie with a motion.
Great. Thank you so much.
Jim Durkin, I'll second.
Excellent. So the motion has been appropriately seconded. And is there any discussion? Seeing none and hearing none, I will go ahead and call for the vote. All in favor of approving the June 15th meeting notes as written, say aye.
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 All opposed? Any abstentions? Wonderful. The motion carries and the June 15th meeting minute notes are all approved. Thank you. And so now we're going to go into our very first presentation. And so we'd like to introduce Shelley Sapiro, as well as Hans Boonenite, who's going to go over our Pharmacy Interoperability and Emerging Therapeutics Task Force update. So Shelley and Hans.
Thank you. I'm Shelley Spiro. I'm the Executive Director of the Pharmacy HIT Collaborative, and I'm pleased to co-chair along with Hans, the Pharmacy Interoperability and Emerging Therapeutics Task Force that has been taking place this summer, as Steve had mentioned. You can go to the next slide. Number one, I would like that here's our agenda. We will be going through the task force charges, talk about the task force membership, and the task force progress that we have done so far, and a little bit of what we will be doing as we move forward to the comments, to the recommendations to the HITECH. If you can go to the next slide. So number one, I would like to thank all of the members of the ONC team. And thank you, Steve, for your kind comments about the work of this particular task force. I would also like to thank the ASEL team, Tricia Lee Roll, for her help in getting this moving and all her help in making this a reality. To Hans for putting up with us and helping us through, especially with the recommendations. Maggie, Mike Berry, thank you, Mike, for all of your help. And also to the ASEL team for their efforts in getting this working. So our overarching charge is to identify recommendations to support interoperability between pharmacy constituents and exchange of information necessary for medication management, patient safety, and consumer engagement. Our recommendations are due in person on November 9th, and these are our specific charges. The first charge is related to public health, emergency use authorization, and prescribing authorities. We've broken up our charges into short-term and long-term goals. Our first short-term goal is under public health was to identify critical standards and data needs for pharmacists and interested parties to participate in emergency use interventions? And are there actions ONC can take to enable a data exchange in support of public health emergency use cases? For example, pharmacists are highly involved and were highly involved during the pandemic for test to treat and COVID-19 treatment prescribing via emergency use authorizations. Our long-term is recommendations to better integrate pharmacy systems and data for public health surveillance reporting and public health interventions. You can go to the next slide. We have broken it out into four topics. So our second topic is to identify opportunities and recommendations to improve interoperability between pharmacy constituents, long list, and also for pharmacy-based clinical services and care coordination. So we're very interested in how can ONC help facilitate adoption of these standards to support data exchange for pharmacy-based clinical services, which priority pharmacy-based clinical use cases should ONC focus on the short term and long term, and what technology gaps exist in pharmacies to participate in value-based care, and what can ONC do to address drug inventory transparency for prescribers and consumers? These are really hot topics right now, and I think our group is doing really well on getting through these topics and making recommendations. Our third topic is to identify standards needs to support prescribing and management of emerging therapies, including but not limited to specialty medications, digital therapeutics, and gene therapies. All these are emerging types of actions that are happening within the pharmacy community. So what standards gap exists for prescribing and management of specialty medications, digital therapeutics, and gene therapies? And our fourth topic, which will take place later on in the fall, identify policies and technology needs and considerations to direct-to-consumer medication services. If you can go to the next slide. So this is our list of our task force members. As you can see, we have many task force members who are part of the HITACH, and we really appreciate their expertise. They've been a great help in moving this initiative forward and have come up with some excellent recommendations moving forward. We have quite a few, we have some subject matter experts from the pharmacy community. All are bringing great discussions and moving things forward. We've had quite a bit of participation from the public on each of our calls. This is a high interest for the pharmacy community. You can go to the next slide. So our progress moving forward, I think, is this you, Hans, taking over?
I think you were going to do the completed, and then I'm going to go to the features.
Okay, thank you. So far completed, I'm sorry, I was looking at the number of slides and we were off because of our beginning slides on this. So we began our first meeting on June 21st and got off to a great start. Number one, I'd like to thank Hans and Tricia Lee Roll for all of their work in putting together a spreadsheet where we are capturing just a huge amount of information, recommendations. We've had just a large amount of comments coming through the chat that we're capturing by the Excel team. They're doing just a great job. Mike Berry is leading us very well through this process also. And I'm very pleased being my first co-chair responsibility for a task force, I'm very pleased and happy that they're able to help us. So our first topic, we identified critical standards and data needs for pharmacists and interested parties to participate in emergency interventions, and are the action items take to enable exchange to support public health emergency use cases. So we've captured most of the recommendations through this process. Our June 28th meeting, we discussed the short-term public health emergency use cases, and we've had several subject matter experts come and present. We've had retired Rear Admiral Pam Schweitzer on the public health side, Lisa Schwartz, who is a senior professional affairs from the National Community Pharmacists Association, Darren Townsend from Walmart, Chad Wartz, who is executive director of the American Society of Consultant Pharmacists. We've brought in the LTPAC setting into these discussions because pharmacy plays a very important role in that setting. And also a couple of folks from STC Health. You can go to the next slide. So we then met on July 12th and started our long-term public health use authorizations. We did take a break for the 4th of July holiday, and we had we've had the team from CDC come and talk to us about the U.S. Public Health Service, from the U.S. Public Health Services, on some of these public health issues. July 19th, we continued our long-term goals in relationship to public health, and we've had more folks from the CDC talk about electronic case reporting on what pharmacists can do to really help in that particular area, and others from the CDC to further help us with immunization information, as I said, electronic case reporting, and other areas that pharmacy can play a very important role in public health. You can go to the next slide. So we took a break. Oh, no, we didn't take a break yet. We went to July 26th, which started our topic two discussion on identifying opportunities and recommendations to improve interoperability, more related to the clinical services and care coordination. Pharmacists play a very important role in many practice settings for care coordination. And we had some speakers. We had Kim Boyd, who's very active within NCPDP. We also had Steve Mullinex and Rick Sage from NCPDP, and Josh Holland, who is a Senior Vice President of Clinical Strategies with RedSail Technologies, which is a national vendor for community pharmacy that is a nationwide vendor. I think they service about 4,500 pharmacies across the United States as a vendor. We took a break in the first part of August for that week as some folks were on vacation, part of the problem of having summer meetings. And then we went on August 9th. We continued our topic two discussions on clinical services and care coordination. And we heard from Jake Glado, who is with the Community Pharmacy Enhanced Service Network, and talked about with dealings, especially with health equity as part of what pharmacists are doing in relationship to social determinants of health and some of the quality initiatives that the pharmacy profession is working on. And if you can go to the next slide, I believe we had our meeting yesterday, which was August 16th, and we continued to work on our spreadsheet and recommendations in relationship to care coordination and clinical services, but this was more of a focused on value-based care. And I think that has caught us up, and I will now turn it over to Hans.
Thank you, Shelley, and thank you for everybody who is participating, providing input on the chat, otherwise in these discussions. And I echo all of Shelley's comments about all the support that we have to make it happen. And that got us kind of through what I think Steve Posnack considered summer camp, and we are working our way into the fall, where we have a couple of upcoming meetings. August 23rd, we're going to progress with task Number two, the last component of that, to understand a little bit more about the some of the inventory transparency topics and what ONC could do there. Some of that conversation actually already started yesterday with some of the perspectives on some of the challenges in that space that we have, and what can we do about it, what can ONC do about it, and probably we'll have some suggestions where ONC can collaborate perhaps with other organizations to address some of these questions as well, because this is some of these are fairly complex as we go through it. August 30th, we are going to then start with topic three and go through the respective areas of focus. So first on specialty medications on August the 30th. We are going to take another little break around Labor Day. So that's why there's a skip to September the 13th, where we continue with the digital therapeutics aspect of that. And if you can go to the next slide. On September 20th, then we are going to go to topic three, standards gaps for gene therapies. September 27th, we're going to go to any remaining emerging therapeutic areas that task force has identified or that we may discuss at that point in time. October, we are going to go to the final step of task four, identifying policies and technology needs. October 11th will get us to a further discussion on that. And if you go to the next slide, the remainder of October and into November to bring us to November the 9th in Washington, DC, where we're going to be finalizing the recommendations, go back to all the materials, make sure that we have it all well organized and ready for the high tech to review, and then make final recommendations to ONC. So as you can see, we still have a fair amount of work in terms of meetings, in terms of presentations. We are identifying additional speakers to provide insights into what we need to discuss. And the next slide, if you can move there, is providing a little bit of an insight on some of the major themes that have been discussed so far. And we need to caveat that obviously with discussions are in progress. As we talk through it, we are clarifying earlier points as well as that we discover some new areas. So don't take this as the list from task one and task two as they will end up, but they certainly are indicative of where we are heading, where we are diving deeper. So around task one, the public health emergency use authorization and prescribing authorities, there's quite a variety of topics that we are getting deeper into. What kind of standards and data exchange challenges can we address? There is a good amount of discussion that we've had around pharmacist-physician collaboration, clinical data sharing, not only about the data to be shared, what is relevant, but as you go through the discussions around test to treatment, where in a number of areas increasingly, or in emergency use scenarios where there's increased inclusion of pharmacists in those processes as well. What data needs to be shared, but also how long-term and otherwise do we address the challenges in that space? Is there good awareness of what the role of the pharmacist is? Authorizations that they have to get access to data, clarifications that need to be in play, etc. So that in itself is already providing some good topics where we are diving deeper. We also explored in that regard pharmacists to public health specifically, the data capture that occurs in the pharmacist, and that's of interest to others as well. And then pharmacists to special settings like long-term care, population level, and other data sharing that needs to occur. Challenges were raised around the sharing of information, and sometimes the challenge of getting to the information. We'd like to, whether that is a technical issue, whether there might be agreements in that space, where there might be other considerations that that may make that challenging. So we identified that as an area where we need to provide some insights and potential recommendations as well. Variations that we see in a variety of different areas also visible in this space, jurisdictionally across jurisdictions, where there's a variety of standards and rules that need to be utilized, and the challenges that that provides, particularly in emergency situations. Resources, funding, privacy, and consent are the other ones that came up. So a rich set of topics around which we started to, as Shelley indicated, we have a set of spreadsheets that in a number of work groups we are starting to get used to on how we are using that to capture our thoughts. Lots of work going on, follow-ups in flight to fine-tune some of the thoughts that we have there. For task two, some of the things that are starting to bubble up, and this was for 2A and B, not yet getting into the one today. Slides were not able to be updated by that time, but I'll give a little bit of a thought around that. There we are looking from a technology perspective very much at aspects of data queries or push messaging. How can we go back and forth? What are the opportunities to take advantage of existing networks? What are some of the challenges with that? Patient matching, it's a challenge that is not only in other areas where we've heard at HITECH about that, but in the pharmacy space as well. UCDI alignment, there is a set of data that is evolving and advancing, expanding. There is a subset of that data that is relevant, particularly in the communication with between pharmacists and providers. What is the set that is relevant? How can we take advantage of that? What are some opportunities there? And talking through that. Use cases starts to also go in task 2C, and that we talked about yesterday in the task force meeting, where we are trying to identify a number of key areas that can help us also better understand what are the needs in these areas. And in that context, combining a little bit of task one and two, some of the governance challenges, the prioritization, the funding, agreements, challenges, opportunities that exist there are then able to come back to those use cases as well. So we had a good and robust discussion yesterday of some of the ones that are particularly coming to mind that are opportunity that provide an indication. Perhaps these are ones to look at, or as you look at these are the things to then start to address long-term, short-term. And then first steps, and that goes back to the short-term, long-term part. What can we do now? But we're also discovering is that there are the things that need to happen regardless of use cases. They're just fundamental that are in play. If you're going to the next slide then, is that we are really talking about how to enable use of existing technology standards and networks. What are barriers to adoption? There's already a lot out there, but for one reason or another is that they may not be deployed as much in that interaction between providers and pharmacies and pharmacists. So what are those barriers? And that's what we're honing in on to give a little bit more insight, what our next step to help remove those. Components in there are not only about the existing technologies, but also education, awareness, what can be done, contractual arrangements, funding and incentives, and the role of USCDI. So those are the topic areas that we have identified so far that we are working around. And as we progress, we'll surely we'll find some more and dive and organize it a little bit deeper in there. But that's rounding out where we are at today and what we're building up for the fall meetings that are coming up. So with that, I think, unless Shelley, you have any additional comments to round that out, I think we are ready for discussion.
No, I have no other comments. Thank you, Hans. Did a great job.
Thank you. So Aaron, Amadel, in however you would like to organize the discussion, we're ready for that.
All right. All right. Let's go for it. So if we could show a raise of hands. That was an excellent presentation, by the way. Thank you for that. I had a second to get off of mute. If any of the high tech members have comments or questions, please signify by raising your hands. And I will look for you in the Zoom box here. Any discussion? All right, we got our hand raised. Hannah Galvin.
Thank you. This is outstanding work. I really applaud the work group. You mentioned that specialty pharmacy work is included in the scope, and I'm just wondering about DME pharmacy and whether that's being included. Some of the real challenges that I've seen are around prescribing oxygen, prescribing nebulizers, and communicating with DME pharmacies. And I'm wondering if that's in scope or if that's potentially in a parking lot for another phase.
I could take that, Hans, if you'd like. Thank you, Hannah. We really look at it from all practice settings. We haven't heard from specific DME, but there are pharmacists out there who have been part of our subject matter experts that are dealing in this area. It hasn't come up yet, but we are open to those discussions on any type of topic related to the exchange of information, including from pharmacies that are providing DME services. So if you have any suggestions for us of subject matter experts, we'd be glad to take them. You can send them to Tricia Leroy.
Great. Thanks.
Or Mike Berry.
Wonderful. Good question, Hannah. All right, Stephen Lane.
Thank you so much. And thank you to the task force co-chairs. You guys have been doing a wonderful job over the summer, herding the cats and bringing some really good ideas to the table. I really want to applaud ONC also for sponsoring this task force. It is such an important topic, and we have such an opportunity to leverage the tremendous resource of community pharmacists who are out there to contribute to the care of our population and ourselves. And we've really been unearthing a number of real challenges that that pharmacists have in doing this effectively and having full access to the clinical data that's necessary to inform decision making, and having access to the interoperability frameworks that we're building that allow them to contribute back to other members of the care team, to payers, public health, et cetera, about the care that's being provided. So just really, thanks to all who are involved in bringing this forward. And I really do think that there are going to be some excellent recommendations that come of this. But I think the bottom line in my mind as a primary care physician is, our patients need all the help they can get, but they need to have that help be informed by full access to data, and to be supported by full integration into the sharing of clinical data downstream from the care. So hopefully that's going to be our outcome, and look forward to working through the rest of this with the task force. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen.
Great point, Stephen. Other comments or questions from HITECH members? Going once. Going twice. Okay. With that, then, thanks again, co-chairs. Really appreciate your hard work at this. And as was articulated by Hannah and Stephen, really critical topic for the industry and one that's desperately needed. So thank you for the hard work here, lifting up your sleeves and making it happen for us. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
All right. So up next, we will go into US CDI version 4. Al Taylor, you're up.
Thanks, Aaron. Glad to be here to provide the HITECH with an update. Next slide, please. I'm going to talk not only about the recently released US CDI version 4, but also some changes that we've implemented to the OnDeck submission system, which will help facilitate the US CDI version 5 submission cycle. I'm also going to go over the HITECH recommendations from the transmittal from April, and talk about at a fairly high level, but talk about ONC's responses to those recommendations to provide some feedback to the HITACH about what we're doing with those recommendations. Next slide. And one more. In July, we published the final version of USCI version 4, which added a new data class facility information, made significant expansion of the data elements in a couple different areas. One is health status assessments and laboratory data. And we also added data elements in some kind of new areas. One is in the goals and preferences data class. The goals previously known as the goals data class. We added two data elements related to the advanced care planning process and being able to capture a patient's preference on particular topics, especially those around interventions such as CPR, intubation, IV fluids, and then also one around the patient's more general healthcare experience. So that we added those two data elements in the goals and preferences data class. And in the medication data class, we also, I think, took a big step forward in being able to capture more accurate and detailed information about the actual medication that a patient has taken by adding two new data elements. One is medication instructions, which is the way that a patient understands their medication should be taken, and then a corresponding medication adherence data element, which says whether the extent to which a patient is taking those medications, whether they be over-the-counter prescription, herbal supplements, whatever, how those, if they're being taken according to those medication instructions. And so those two things put together, I think, go quite a ways towards capturing a fuller picture. In the past, we had data elements just about the intended dose, the intended medication, and these get much closer to the actual truth about the medication. And so we feel like that's a good, really, really strong addition to the medications data class. And two other ones, performance time, which is one related to the timing element of a procedure or anything that is performed on or for a patient. And then a new vital sign, which has long been awaited, the average blood pressure vital sign. Those are the highlights for the additions to USCDI version 4. And the next slide shows USCDI version 4 as a whole. I believe we have 120 data elements. I could be off by a couple, but it's now 120 data elements across 19 data classes. And next slide. This is just a really quick, this is a high-level summary of some changes that happened over the various versions of USCDI. And it points to sort of the iterative process, but also we have tried to follow a predictable process but also collaborative, where we really try to engage a great number of users, interested parties, to add new things to USCDI. And it's been, I feel like it's been very successful. We've had tremendous participation each round, whether it's a draft version or a final version. We have had many hundreds of comments or submissions about additions to USCDI. So clearly there's interest in expanding, but also better defining this core data set. So we feel good about the progress that we've made and look forward to continuing to do that with version 5 and beyond. Next slide. I mentioned the several hundred data, comments and submissions for new data elements ONC has to prioritize, and we have prioritized amongst the most mature, most feasible data elements. We continue to do that, addressing both technical priorities. Those are the most ready, most feasible, lowest burden to implement, but also those that address particular policy goals of ONC and HHS, And that's related to addressing, you know, adding data elements that address healthcare disparities, underserved communities, behavioral health integration into primary care, along with a number of different public health reporting requirements. And this continues. We made one change to the priorities for version 4, and we are going forward with version 5 with the same set of priorities that are listed here. And so we will continue to do that, to look at the many, many data elements and use these priorities to help select the next round of additions to USCDI. Next slide. We also made some changes to the ONDEC system to help really help facilitate the submission, increase the transparency for users, for submitters, so that they have a better expectation about what they're going to get. So if they submit a data element, they should know. The intent is that these changes will let them know what they should expect as far as leveling and the possibility of it being considered for USCDI, the next version, as they're submitting these, as opposed to waiting for a week or two for ONC to do a full processing of the submission. And so we feel like these changes will go a long way towards that, providing transparency and expectations for the submitters. Next slide. For the most part, this is the only major change there's one major change that we made when we published V4 is that we changed, not only did we try and clarify the criteria for each level, we actually renamed the lowest level or the lowest level of feasibility and maturity for a data element that is submitted, and that's called level 0. It used to be called comment level. There was some confusion as to whether or not things that were listed in comment levels were just comments or they were actual data elements. And so this being level 0 does not mean it's got no value or no potential, but it is just just a renaming of the sort of the entry level, data elements. We also published a leveling criteria page so that you can review so that a submitter can review what the criteria are, and that's on the next slide, please. So it's sorted by different levels, and so data elements that are in the level 2 meet all of the criteria that are listed in the first row, and then so on through the levels. There's one that I wanted to point out that I think that would also add some clarity. In level 0, a lot of data elements, quite a few data elements, get leveled as level 0, not because they're immature, but because they're not well represented, they're not exchanged, but that they represent a very small subset or a specialization of other more general data elements. That may not sit well with some submitters, but we have to, because the U.S. core data for interoperability is a core set, and it has to apply to a broader community of users of data. When a data element is so highly specialized that it's only applicable to a very narrow use case or a very narrow care setting, we assign it this to level 0. And this is an alternative to what we have done in the past, which is to merge one of these specialty data elements into one of the more general data elements. And the reason this is an improvement because everybody can see that data element. If it's merged into another data element, it basically disappears from the public view. But anybody who goes to the website can see that there was a data element that was submitted that is described as a specialization of another data element. And so they have a better understanding about why it didn't make a higher level or didn't make USCDI. Next slide, please. Those same criteria are listed on each of the level tabs on USCDI webpage. This is the level 2 criteria. Data elements that are listed on level 2 meet all of these criteria. And so if they don't meet all of them, they get relegated to a lower level. And the next two slides are level one and level zero, respectively. And that's just, again, as people review USCDI in general, they can review what's in level two and see how we've determined these. I'll say that if you are reviewing these levels, we continue to go back and review our evaluations of these data elements in the past, and you may see a shift in the level assignment for some data elements because we've gone back and reviewed them and realized that they are either more or less broadly applicable, and so may get re-leveled over the next maybe couple months as we do some more cleanup on the website. And next slide. And one more, please. So I'm going to move on to the submission timeline. This is a pretty basic review. Next slide. We published, as everybody knows, we published V4 in July, which opened up the USCDI V5 cycle. As Steve mentioned at the very beginning, the submission cycle goes through the 20th of September. Midnight Eastern on September 20th, after which time we complete the processing and the evaluation of all of the submissions, along with all of the comments on previously submitted data elements that might, a level two data element from the past that some people think ought to be reconsidered for version five. And then we take the time to go through the process of evaluating and selecting a new set of data elements for version 5. And then with the planned release of V5, a draft V5 in January of next year, and then the cycle repeats. Next slide. Now we get to the fun part. We're gonna go through the April transmittal letter from the HITECH to ONC. And I'm going to talk at a fairly high level about the recommendations and what has happened since those recommendations were made. So we published V5 in the interim. I'm sorry, we published V4 in the interim, and some of the recommendations were incorporated into V4, and some were not. Many are still under consideration, however, for future work. This recommendation letter, next slide, please. This recommendation letter was broken down into three parts. One is recommendations and comments on the elements that were added to V4, to draft V4, rather. And then the second part is recommendations for level two data elements that did not make draft V4, and whether or not those should be changed or even reconsidered for addition to USCDI version 4. For those who didn't already notice, we did not add any new data elements to draft V4 when we published V4 final, but those level 2 data elements still remain in consideration for future versions, pending reconsideration or additional information about more broadly applicable or aligning them more with some of our priorities, our additional priorities for selection. None of those data elements were added to USCDI, but definitely we've added the HITECH recommendations to the other comments that were received on these data elements, and we'll continue to consider them for future versions. And then we did receive one recommendation from the HITECH about areas where ONC might want to focus in the future, and so we'll go through those. There's I think two recommendations that will be look out of order, and we did not if a recommendation some of the recommendations are kind of rolled up into other recommendations, so we didn't ignore those recommendations. We just considered them elsewhere. All right, so let's get started on the next slide. And you can follow along in the recommendations transmittal. The link is in the slide deck, and those probably already know where it lands. You can follow along as we go through. Again, this is a high level summary of the recommendation and the response. And so there may be some detail that's not in these. There will be some detail that's not in those slides. Next slide. We, as I said, we adopted all of the data elements in on draft V4, with the exception two that we had named, and I'm going to go over those. But we did adopt we adopted focusing on the health status assessments. There was a recommendation to address specific low-link codes for the health status assessment data elements that we did add. And the way that we did that is by adding specific examples that aligned with the examples are represented by specific low-link codes rather than acquiring specific low-link codes. We added these as examples because we still want to allow flexibility in how data is collected and shared. So we provided those specific examples as we provided those specific low-link codes as examples. Two of the recommendations were about development of appropriate vocabulary and standards. These are related to facility. There's not currently a broad consensus about which standards ought to be used for facility data. And so that work will continue in the broader community. We look forward to seeing what might develop. We would love to be able to provide some specificity to help developers and implementers complete this work. So we look forward to seeing what shapes up. Next slide. We, again, with the same as with health status assessments, we added some specific examples to the average blood pressure. One of the recommendations for laboratory result interpretation in particular was to add an applicable vocabulary standard that relates to HL7, an HL7 specific code system. Most of the time we have relied on the broader vocabulary standards like SNOMED, LOINC, CPT, ICD-10, and in this case, we did adopt VHL7 observation interpretation as an applicable standard for result interpretation. It's currently listed as optional, but it is we did accept that. The other lab data elements, including the one for that, are specifically required by CLIA, and the recommendation from the HITECH was to cite that specific recommendation. I'm sorry, cite that specific requirement. While we did not adopt that, because we have stayed away from citing specific recommendations, specific requirements, because there generally are more than one, and even beyond the requirements, there's a broader need for it. So though we didn't cite the CLIA requirement, that still stands as another justification for adding it to USCDI. The first recommendation that we accepted for a name change, although we named it something different than the HITECH recommended, was the specimen condition and disposition data element. And we renamed it the specimen condition acceptability data element. I think it's a subtle change, but it's an important change to really add some clarity about what the meaning of that data element is. Next slide. The second rename procedure is we renamed the time of procedure to performance time, although that's not reflected in the slide. There was the recommendation that it not apply to labs. The way we adopted that recommendation is to remove the laboratory related timing elements from the examples. So we appreciate the comment and accommodated it. As such, there was recommendations to change the definition of the medication-related data elements. And we did that with the exception of the requiring reason for non-adherence for the medication adherence, and we really feel like that's a separate data element. So we have a process to let folks know that what their comment was represented a new submission, and therefore it had to be submitted through the OnDeck system for full consideration. I see some potential in that data element, it remains to be seen. whether that will be considered and added to version 5, but it's a separate data element, so we couldn't adopt it, that recommendation for a new data element, but instead went into this more normal process. And then the recommendation to change the name of the goals data class, as I mentioned before, was accepted. And moving on to part 2, which was the data elements that were, next slide, data elements that were level 2 but not included in USCDI. As I mentioned before, we didn't adopt any of these data elements, but they are all still under consideration for next round based on policy priorities that I've mentioned that's on a previous slide. And these will be reconsidered this time around, particularly if there's specific comments that are added as to why they should be reconsidered for the next round of next version of USCDI. Next slide. Same goes for the for these data elements. I think I might have a repeat on this on the first data element, but the first set of data elements. We had the two at the bottom on recommendation number 22, adding metadata or requiring a source and method for the data collection for sex for clinical use and recorded sex or gender. We did not adopt either the data elements or those additional metadata elements, but that is aligned with how we have done this in the past, where we don't require that a data element be sourced by a particular source, but allows for it to be sourced by a patient, by a provider, by a machine, and so it's still a candidate for reconsideration, we will take another look in this next round. Next slide. These are additional data elements that were recommended for V4 that were not adopted. I wanted to talk a little bit about the recommendation 27, which mentioned a number of different data elements that were recommended to be added. Again, not previously submitted, would need to be resubmitted through OnDeck, but also that the data elements specifically allow a patient source or patient generated source for the data element. And this goes back to what I just said about we have not specified that a data element has to be sourced by a patient or not by a patient, but it certainly is allowed. It's allowed in the data element, and so we feel like we did not feel like it was necessary to specify that these it's okay for a data to be sourced by the patient, because in many cases the ultimate origination of the data is the patient in any case, so we didn't specify that, but it certainly is allowed for many data elements. Next slide. The diagnostic imaging data elements that we did consider, we spent a lot of time in the HITACH and the ISWG developing these recommendations. And while we recognize the value and the interoperability, enhancing the interoperability of diagnostic imaging data is a really important topic. The data elements, the feedback that we got from a variety of different stakeholders was that the data is not ready for widespread collection exchange. There are methods that are out there, but they can't be broadly applied in many cases, so more work needs to be done. And we actually called for some of that work when we published the standards bulletin, and we hope that more work is done and some more clarity is brought to the topic, and so that hopefully we will be able to this could be mature enough, broadly applicable enough to consider for new versions. And the other data elements here were considered but not adopted as additional data elements around facility and medication. Next slide. These remaining data elements, so that the last three, the health status assessment, one of the recommendations in recommendation 33 was to, the recommendations were to add specific requirements to the data elements, and we did not adopt those, but that's still, still something to be considered to redefine them to require the responses to the questions and not just the questions. Next slide. And actually, next two slides forward, please. And then the final recommendation is to advance one of the data elements. And we did not adopt that, but when additional information is provided, we certainly would consider it. All right, I am over, apologize for that. And we can open it up for questions. I see one in the chat, maybe two in the chat from when I started. And yes. I don't know.
And Al, thank you, Al, so much for this critical information that we all need to know. And we are close to our public comment, but we're going to allow 3 minutes for discussion. Please, HITECH members, keep your questions very concise so that Al can answer them and we can get to public comment. So great. The first hand that I see is Ike's hand.
Thank you so much, Al. That was a wonderful presentation, wonderful overview. Two questions, really straightforward. Number one, for those things that were not included in this last iteration, should comments be submitted while OnDeck is open for inclusion for the next iteration for things that are in level two, or will things that are in level two automatically be reviewed for consideration in version 5. Second question is, can you talk just for a moment about aligning things like the laboratory data with public health reporting? Because one of the things I think we want to have as a goal is to help ensure that things that are in the USCDI or things that are in requirements for public health reporting are included in the USCDI. And there are a number of those laboratory elements that are directly related to public health reporting, as well as general health report or general health exchange. Thanks.
There are two things. One is we welcome comments on level two data elements that didn't make it this time around, and that's not only the specific ones that were recommended, but all the other ones that didn't sort of rise to the very top. Rather than submitting new data element, repeating the new the data elements that were not accepted as level two, adding comments to add to the case for considering those level two data elements for V5, we fully expect that. We did that last time. We did it during the draft period. We expected and we encourage it this time around as well. As far as adding data elements that align to public health reporting or any other, one of the primary reasons that we did add the laboratory data elements that we did is because they aligned. We adopted them in a way that would align as best as possible to the public health reporting requirements. And so, you know, we might actually try and shape a data element that is like almost well aligned with a specific requirement like public health reporting so that it would be, so that we don't have to adopt two different kinds of the same data element to meet more than one use case.
Great. Thank you so much for that answer, Al. Stephen Lane, I recognize your hand. We're going to go to public comment right now first, and hopefully we'll have some time for your question. If not, please do send your question to Al and the rest of the ONC team. So Mike, I will turn it on over to you for public comment.
All right, great. Thank you, Madel. We're going to open up our meeting for verbal public comment. If you'd like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you happen to be on the phone only, press star 9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. So let's pause just for one moment to see if any members of the public raise their hand. And I see Mary Savicki. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, but please go ahead. You have 3 minutes.
Oh, hi. I'll just be really short. It's Mari with Chime. Thanks for taking my comment. and a great presentation on the medication pieces and the pharmacy pieces. Just heard the piece about the patient identification and just want to reiterate that our members continue to express significant concerns around that. And that continues to be one of the chief barriers to the ubiquitous interoperability and spread, sharing of information across the healthcare system. So it is an issue. And we just applaud you for pointing that out and anything we can do to work with the administration, given that there is still the ban in Congress, we would welcome that opportunity. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mari. And I see someone with a 617 area code. If you could state your name and provide your comment, you have 3 minutes. And you're on mute.
Hello,
go ahead. If you hit star 6, you should be able to unmute your line.
Yes, hi, sorry. This is Cynthia Fisher, and I'm on the committee. And just at a high level of consideration is from the patient aspect of pricing and receipt of payment at point of sale is it's been noticeable that patients have not been able to have access to the total price and receipts at pharmacy. In some, they just receive their copay amount. And in law, for years, it's been in play that patients have the right to the past, present, and future payment information. And we're at a time where a patient should be able to receive a digital provenance of both their out-of-pocket costs or their copay, as well as the total price for the pharmacy or the drug or the laboratory. So especially when you have a diabetic or you have a disease where you iteratively get labs or drugs, to be able to see the run rate or the comparative rate on your plan and to prevent any overcharges for accountability. So I just think as we look at this whole accessibility and moving to the patient to having a digital provenance, but more importantly, having access to the actual pricing and coding and the drug named itself with what the plan pay is, as well as the out-of-pocket. So I think having a complete picture is truly important. Otherwise, we don't have accountability, we have overcharging, and we don't have an apples-to-apples comparative pricing across the industry and across points of access to purchasing such modalities of care. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Cynthia. And I just want to note that's Cynthia Fisher, one of our current HITECH members. So thank you, Cynthia, for your comment. Just want to remind everybody that the next HITECH meeting is scheduled for September 14th and that all of our HITECH materials, whether for this meeting or any of our subcommittees, can be found on healthit.gov. I'm not seeing any other hands raised, so I'll turn it back to Erin and Modell to close us out.
Thank you so much, Mike. And as always, time always flies here on HITECH. So I just want to extend a sincere thank you to all of our presenters today and, of course, to our HITECH members for all of your engagement and to the public for joining us. Erin, any other last thoughts?
No, I just want to echo what you said and thank you all for a great, fun, very engaging conversation. Great job again to our panelists and our co-chairs, as well as to all of you. So great job and we'll see you soon. Have a great one.
Take care, everyone. Enjoy summer.